So we have just started a series that Jeff is calling Little House, or Not So Little House on the Greenway. And 2 weeks ago, the idea of the series Little House on the Greenway is that God would speak to us about our daily life, relationships, and other topics from the book of Proverbs. So 2 weeks ago, Micah started the series by talking about first our relationship with God from the story of the prodigal son, and then also from Micah's relationship with his grandfather, which is very special. And then last week, Jeff introduced Proverbs chapter 1, and that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So as I thought about what should I talk about, the first thought that came to mind that didn't really change was that I would talk about the marriage relationship. And Carol and I are going to be married for 30 years in September, and only wish we'd been married longer, so we'll talk about that. So a little bit of our story. We met at Virginia Tech freshman year. It was 1981. Carol came onto my radar in the spring or late winter of 1982. We had known each other through InterVarsity Christian Fellowship and a thing that was called Shanks Bible Study. Shanks was the dorm it was held in. And so, you know, I'd come to the place where I was like, Lord, I'm just not going to pursue. I'm just going to, you know, Lord, you bring a girl to me, because I was thinking, I'm in college now. He owes me. It's time, right? And that didn't work well when I was trying to make that happen, but the Lord made this happen. So, she caught my eye, and in April, it took until midnight to separate her from the herd, so to speak, and get her so we could really actually have our very first conversation. We had never had a private one-on-one conversation, so we walked down this bike path outside of campus through the cow pastures for 2 hours on a Friday night in April. And we talked about how Christians should not date until they've been well-established friends. And then 3 weeks later, we confessed our mutual affection and we smooched for the first time. And the moral of that story is friendship just isn't for everybody. So, and the fun thing, I didn't even remember this when I started to prepare, but I remember tomorrow is the 35th anniversary of that day. So we've been a couple for 35 years tomorrow. Yay. we dated for 4 years. We were engaged for one. We were married in September 87. It was kind of cute. You know, we're going to fight over the toothpaste, right? So I had always used Crest. Her family always used Colgate. So we showed up on the honeymoon. I had bought a tube of Colgate, and she had bought a tube of Crest. So now I use Sensodyne, and she uses whatever's on sale. So that's, you know, we gave up on all that. That first year, we had a couple of hard spots, no fights, but we're just not fighters. But we did have a couple of hard spots where insecurities welled up and kind of confusion and bewilderment welled up as we're just figuring out, okay, we're getting to know each other better than we did before. In dating. And so that first year, it was wonderful, and we just had a couple of moments like that. 2 years later, Malia was born, October 1st, 89. And then we moved to Germany, and this is the way you choose, this is the way you decide to make an international move. My boss came to me at the copy machine and said, would you be interested in moving to Germany? And I said, I don't need to ask my wife. I can tell you right now, we're all in. Let's go. And the fact is, when I got home, I said, hey, this came up. She said, oh, let's go. I mean, I just knew. So we moved to Germany, and we were there for 5 years on a living in the German economy, but working on an American base for 5 years. Gretchen, Peter, and Adam were all born in Germany. And then in 96, we moved back. We moved back to our little house in McLean. It was 1,000 square feet. We had 4 kids. We didn't stay there long. We moved to Herndon and in 97, and that's when we started coming to this church in the summer of 97. A couple of years later, when Malia entered fifth grade, we made the decision to start homeschooling, and Carol homeschooled all 4 kids. Malia and Adam actually went back to public high school and graduated, but Peter and Gretchen graduated from Wayside Academy. Wayside Circle Academy specifically, and that's what we put on the diploma. And so we've had kind of a mixed bag of public and home school. Eric was born in 2002, and because we knew, and I really mean this, even numbers are just simply easier. I'm telling you, it's easier. And we knew Eric was a lot younger. He was 7 years younger than Adam. He needed a playmate. So I said, well, we need to have one more. So we had Jonathan in 2004. And it was kind of funny. Having the sixth was so much harder than the fifth, fourth, third, or second. It was kind of weird. But so now our kids are 27, 25, 23. Adam turns 22 this week. Eric turns 15 in a couple of weeks. And Jonathan just turned 13. So we've got quite the spread. I'll tell you, we have Carol had all six births were completely natural with minimal to zero intervention, and she never uttered a sound. Through six deliveries, she never uttered a sound. Just the slightest groan is all I can remember. It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I've never been in more awe of my bride than when I watched those events. It was truly, truly amazing. So, you know, 30 years together brings its difficulties, and we've, in crossroads, we've had plenty of those. But I'll say I'm blessed and privileged. I've never wanted to be single, and I've never wanted to be married to anybody else. And I look back, and I see where that's not necessarily typical. Even in the church, that's not necessarily typical. And I recognize that, you know, I'm just so grateful for a healthy marriage, but I know that that isn't always true, and there are hard situations with unwanted singleness or divorce or a marriage that isn't as fulfilling as you wish it was. So I'm just hoping that as I share from my experience and from Proverbs, that you'll find some encouragement and some help for a brighter day. So first, how do we prepare for, if you're in that stage, or build strong marriages? And even if you've been married for 30 years or longer, and you feel like, well, we haven't really done this, it's never too late to start. So let's start today. So how do we do that? First and foremost, the first thing to do, the most important thing to do for your marriage, is to be intentional about following Jesus. To be with Paul and say, I count all things as loss compared to the surpassing worth of knowing Jesus Christ my Lord. That is the first and most important thing you can do for your spouse, for your kids, for yourself, of course. So I asked Dean, my good friend Dean. Dean likes to be mentioned in, I'm just teasing him. I can do that. Anyway, I did ask Dean. I said, Dean, I can trust you. I'm not surfing for a shallow compliment here. I said, you've known me for 20 years. You've observed my marriage for 20 years. What do you see that makes Carol and I function well as husband and wife? And he said, oh, that's easy. He said, you both are serious about your walk with God. And you always have been. And you're not trying to change the other. You're just intentional about following the Lord and letting the Lord do that changing. And I am really grateful to say that for our whole 35 years, from since before we were dating, we have been intentional and serious about following the Lord, and that is a foundation that the rest of everything has been built on. He also touched on this other point, you know, what's a stereotype, right? You know, she's trying to change me, he's trying to change me. Don't do that. Let God change your spouse. You married him. If you married him with the idea that you were going to fix him, that explains some of the trouble you may or may not be experiencing. The Lord can do a much better job of changing your spouse than you can. Now, that doesn't mean that you never point out any of their faults, that you never address any of the things that frustrate you, but you need to first recognize your own faults. You need to first recognize your own weaknesses, and then approach your spouse with gentleness about theirs. And do it at a time when you're not in the middle of being frustrated and exasperated about what it is you want to change. You need to just stuff that and wait until everything's calmed down, and then you go talk to him and say, you know what happened here? That, and you let those things happen. So in premarital counseling, we had a guy named Dean West at McLean Bible Church back in the 80s who did our premarital counseling. He was a great guy, and we did this little survey, and this survey showed that Carol was insecure and that I am blunt and direct. I still don't understand that, but just kidding. So, yeah, so that, you know, that was, I don't remember, I think we were, you know, that did not come as some big surprise, but it was really helpful to just say, look, in the context of you getting married, you need to be aware of these things. And that enabled us to approach one another in a much better way, knowing that about each other. And the other part, and I said this up here before, that he said to us was never be defensive. I do not care what it is being said to you, never be defensive. Listen to what your spouse is saying. Take time to consider, is there some truth here? And then you can decide over time, this is true or it's not. But I will say that's one thing that I have been able to do, and it really stemmed right from that counseling, was I am not a defensive person, and neither is she, and that has helped us to avoid innumerable fights. We just don't, it paves the way for peace, so I would encourage you to do that. I trust Carol. I rely on Carol. I trust her to speak into my life, to say things to me that are true and for my good. I can trust her to do that. And and whether I liked what I'm hearing or not, because sometimes it's aggravating, yeah, I know, and I don't feel like I can change, all right? So, you know, it's a little aggravating, but I still know she's right. So, and knowing that she's right is a joyful thing, because I can, you know, just trusting your spouse is a joyful thing. I'll just say that. So Proverbs speaks several times to the opposite of this gentle, self-aware, non-defensive approach. You have a few directed at the wives. Proverbs 25:24. It is better to live in a desert land, than with a quarrelsome and fretful woman. And I didn't list these other ones up here, but there's at least twice it says it is better to live on the corner of a wolf, corner of a roof, than with a nagging wife. I believe there's also one in there that says, and I just jotted this down on the side this morning, a nagging woman is like a dripping faucet. I thought, yeah, but she's nagging him about the dripping faucet, so he ought to do something about it, right? So, but it's not just on her. The Proverbs 26:21, as charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome man for kindling strife. You know, I do get tired, and I even hear it in the church, I get tired of the stereotypes of husband and wife, right? What's society telling us that every marriage looks like, even though it doesn't, but they try to make you think it does. You know, it's tit for tat, 50-50. Hey, I did this for you. You need to do this for me, or I let you go do this. You need to let me go do that. You know, the husband is just stupid and lazy. The wife's just nagging and demanding. I mean, doesn't this just make you tired? Just to see that and hear that all the time? Well, the problem is that, you know, those come out of Proverbs because that's the root of our human nature, and that's the way we are without the Holy Spirit changing us and coming in and changing our lives, and that intentionality that we need to do first. It's just too often true. So one of my favorite stories about Carol and me is, so one of my imperfections is I will let things stay broken or not working at optimum level sometimes for months at a time. Frankly, I just don't think about it. I never think about it at the right time. And I get around to it eventually, right? And some of it is I don't know how to fix it, so I don't really want to try because I don't know what to do. And I don't know what to do. I don't remember what was broken in this particular instance, but a few years ago, I'll just say it was the washing machine was leaking, for lack of a better example. So she told me, hey, the washing machine's leaking. Okay, I needed to know that. That was information I needed to know. And then maybe once every few weeks, maybe once every several weeks, she would say, you know, the washing machine, it's still leaking. I said, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I need to get to that. So finally, one Saturday, I decided I'm going to fix the washing machine. And I said, hey, honey, I'm going to head over to Home Depot and get what I need, and I'm going to fix the washing machine. And all she did was she just said, that would be nice. And I said, man, nag, nag, nag. And we both had a good laugh. It was just genuinely funny. So so she is not a nagging wife, I can tell you that. So another key admonition to improve our marriage is to choose to love your wife. Choose to love your husband. Choose to do that regardless of how they look that day, regardless of how they're responding to you that day, responding of how they're feeling that day. Choose to love them. You know, we first choose to pursue Jesus, to pursue him first. And it says, when you are free in Christ, you are free indeed. And that freedom means that we can choose to follow him. We are not obligated to follow him. That obligation is called the law, and we have been freed from the law because he fulfilled the law, and we are free to choose to follow him. Likewise, marital faithfulness is a choice. Now, you can rightly argue that we are obligated to our spouses because we made a pledge on our wedding day to be their spouse and all the things that you say there. But the point is, we can obviously choose whether to honor that pledge or not. So choose to honor that pledge. And marital faithfulness flows from those choices. So Proverbs 5, Solomon, he's talking about the adulteress in the first part of the chapter, and then he talks about being faithful, sexually faithful to your spouse, and he uses that physical faithfulness as a picture of the broader marital faithfulness. And he says in Proverbs 5, starting in 15 through 19, drink water from your own cistern, flowing from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. A lovely deer, a graceful doe, let her breast fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. Always, ongoing, never ending, from the day you've chosen her or him until throughout, Lord willing, through the rest of your life, choose her in the picture here, or him. Choose to rejoice in the wife of your youth. So our own Jeff Good quoted the revered Reverend Billy Graham just a few weeks ago. It was a bit shocking. He said, you know, Billy Graham said, you don't even know what good sex is until you've been married for 40 years. Now that's a little shocking coming from those two, but it speaks to the blessing and the depth that comes from making the right choices. And those choices also directly affect your children. The most important thing you can do for your children is to love Jesus first, but also to love your spouse. I heard this from James Dobson back in the 80s over and over again on Focus on the Family. Karis is snickering about something. I'll call you out on the recording now. Your dad can ask you what it is. Angela's still laughing. Okay. Angela, it's time to move on. James Dobson said the most important thing you can do for your kids is to love your spouse. Well, I didn't. I truly, as a 25-year-old young man, I didn't understand that. That truly did not make sense to me. Now I will tell you I completely get it, because that faithfulness breeds stability. It breeds a safe home for your kids. I never doubted the love of my parents for either for me or for each other. And I realize now what a tremendous gift that was to me, that stability that I just never even occurred to me that there could be any brokenness in the home. And I praise the Lord that in their case there wasn't. My fears were limited to, is the house going to catch on fire tonight, right? Typical childhood fear. Whereas this girl, Linda, up the street my age, they found her on the stoop every now and then crying because her parents were inside the house screaming at each other. And those scars just don't go away. And they last for a lifetime, and only Jesus can heal those. And I believe in her case that he is doing that. Anyway, I'm just grateful that my kids have never had cause to worry. One of the, I would say Carol and I have never had a true fight. And it's just kind of we're people pleasers, and that some of that's personality driven, of course. But I do remember one time where we were really aggravated with each other at the same time. Usually it's one or the other, right? We are aggravated at the same time. We are in our kitchen in Herndon, and we are standing on either side of the kitchen just glaring at each other. And then I look over, and Gretchen is standing in the doorway looking at us, and her jaw is just on the floor. And I remember just starting to laugh, and so I was like, that's kind of funny. This doesn't happen that often. And of course, I have no idea what it was, right? Whoever remembers why. So the fact is, I love my wife, and I am intoxicated by her in every way. And I tell my kids that she is first in my life, and that I love her more than I love them. It's a different, it's a different kind of love, but to make the point, I love your mom. And she is number one in my life. And I have never wanted anyone else because I have consistently chosen to never want anyone else. I've never wanted anyone else because I choose to never want anyone else. Now, Carol makes that choice easy. She really does. But it is still a choice. I love this story. I tell her how beautiful she is all the time because it's true, because I mean it. And so I tell the kids that, and Jonathan's already chuckling because he knows he's about to get called out. So, so Jonathan, this was like a year ago. I said, Eric and Jonathan, your mom is just, she's just so beautiful. And Jonathan goes, I know, Dad. You tell us that all the time. It's really annoying. Only Jonathan. That's awesome. Okay, so that brings me to the topic of the Proverbs 31 woman. I thought, who better than me to tell the women of our church what they should aspire to be, right? I am not about to do that. In fact, I'm going to debunk the idea that this is what Proverbs 1 is telling you exactly what you should be, because it's not. In Proverbs 1 that Jeff went through last week, wisdom is personified as a woman. She cries in the streets to the simple, beckoning them to come to wisdom. Wisdom is personified as a woman. And here at the end of Proverbs, the writer is again, Solomon is again, using a woman to embody the wisdom that the book has talked about. Proverbs 31 is talking about an excellent wife, but it is also this embodiment of wisdom that every woman and every man should aspire to attain, and that we should be praying for and seeking out. It is calling out what all of us should be striving for. Now, with that said, Carol told me again this week, I hate the Proverbs 31 woman. And the fact is, probably a lot of women kind of hate the Proverbs 31 woman. Well, why is that? Because they're comparing themselves to her. They're thinking, well, I'm supposed to be her, which is just not true. Comparing is always a bad idea. It's always dangerous and just going to lead you astray. Instead, you got to take into account everybody's different. Strengths and weaknesses are different. She is embodying the wisdom that we should attain, not the exact model of what a woman is supposed to be, or the exact picture. So with that said, let's make sure I'm not missing something important here. Good. So Proverbs 31, starting in verse 10. An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her. and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. So simply put, I have found an excellent wife. And Carol, brace yourself. These next few minutes are probably going to be a little not making you comfortable, but that's okay. Let me, before I go any further, I just want to say there are a lot of excellent women in our church. And I just happen to know one really well and love one really well. And I asked Pastor Jeff, is it okay if I indulge and use the fact that I get the stage to talk about my wife? And he heartily encouraged me to do so. So, with that said, I cannot speak enough of how precious my wife is. I trust her completely. Everything good that I ever do, and I have told people at work this, everything good that I ever do at work or at home or in the church, I can attribute in large part to her. So Proverbs 31 talks about this industrious woman. And she does all these business dealings, and she does all these kind of ridiculously amazing things. And apparently she really loves to sell, because there's all kinds of clothing and garments and linens talked about in Proverbs 31. It's like, good grief, all she likes to do is sew. Well, Carol hates to sew. She hates it. She does not like to sew. She'll put on a button when I ask her, but I usually don't. And she just hates it. And she's not a businesswoman. Frankly, she's not particularly crafty. And she's not particularly well-organized. She'd be the first to tell you that. Those are just things about her. So she looks at this and says, well, I hate this gal because there's no way I can be her. But Carol does so many other things. She is frugal in such a good way, and she's never frivolous. A story from our dating days. We went to Nigeria in 1985, and we were dating. We were not engaged. And we had been together for 3 years at that point. And so when you go on those trips, we were there for 9 weeks. When you go on those trips, you want to come back with little trinkets and gifts for family and stuff. So I still can just picture the whole thing. She was looking at these two carved wooden masks, and she asked the man how much. And he goes, 110 naira. Well, that was about $100. And she just bursts out, 110? I'll give you two. And this guy wouldn't let her go. And for the next 15, 20 minutes, he's bartering with her and arguing with her. And she got both masks for 15 bucks, 15 naira. And I sat there just, I had never seen this in her yet. It was intimidating. It was intimidating. Okay, so verse 20. She opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. Now, Carol loves snow. She really does. And I think this is pretty obvious here, that if you want to be a wise, godly woman, you have to love snow. That's just my interpretation. You're free to differ. But she is more concerned that we give than that we buy things she wants. And there's lots of stories to that end, but I'm going to keep going here. She is, nobody's selfless. She is selfish. I am selfish. We all have that streak, and we all fight that streak. But she is selfless and caring beyond her strength. She's diligent to care for everybody around her. Our home is safe. It's clean. It's comfortable. She's hospitable. People comment on this all the time. You can be yourself in our home. You can just come and just flop down and be yourself. There is no pretension in our home. And she makes up for her lack of sewing with cooking and baking. And I'll simply say what I've said, some of you have heard before. If there's a potluck at this church, don't waste your time eating what you or anybody else brings. Go straight for whatever Carol brought, because it's the best thing there, and it's pretty much all I ever eat. So not literally true, but it's pretty true. And one word, baklava, it has, the fame of that has crossed many a state line at this point. So That's enough said about that. Verse 25, I'm skipping a few here and there. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. And this truly speaks to the deepest depths of the richness of my wife. She has the steady strength and wisdom that just carries all of us. I'm sure you didn't know this. She is the one who proofreads all of my sermons. She reads all of my first drafts, and she's the one who guides and shapes some of what I'm going to say. Now, I will obviously tell you, she did not read this part of this sermon because I know what would have been cut. So, but she does that. In home group, if she speaks up, everybody stops, and they listen. She doesn't say enough, and they want to hear what she has to say. Verse 28, her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. So speaking to the kids, you know, I remember one time that I marveled at just how consistently she had cared for our kids over so many years, rarely with complaint. Now, she was consistent. She was not tireless in her mothering, because she was often tired, okay? So that's what I mean by that. But I asked her, how have you done this? How have you just stayed the course so steadily for so long? And she replied that she considered this to be her spiritual service of worship. And I just thought, wow. So this next part's going to be really fun. I asked for a snippet from each of the kids. There's more that I'll read over, that I'll give her at lunch. So Jonathan, so three of them wrote, three of them just told me what they wanted to say. So Jonathan, not to put too fine a point on it, just said, she puts up with all our crap while doing everything for us. Eric, and this is true Eric too, well, I like everything about Mom. That's all he said. They wanted to get on to with whatever they were going to go do, right? And so Adam wrote a blip here. He says, Mom is the most loving and caring person. She is such a good example of keeping her focus on God, even when times are hard. I am so thankful that I have parents that I am not afraid to talk to and say how I am doing emotionally, physically, or spiritually. I am so blessed, proud, pleased, and thankful to call her Mom. Now, Peter, who for good reason just talked to me on the phone, he said this, what comes to mind first is her endless caring. And I love this. We were a lot of kids, and she always tried to be there for each one of us individually. That's pretty special. Gretchen wrote, and I'm going from youngest to oldest, some of you didn't know that. Gretchen wrote, here are some thoughts about my wonderful mother. The first thing that comes to mind when I think about what I admire in Mama is her sacrificial love. She always puts herself last, from serving everyone at dinner before serving herself, to the way she took care of Grandma, her mother. Mama is absolutely adorable. I genuinely love when Mama gets giddy. It's just the greatest. And usually one sip of wine and that's all it takes. She's so funny when she gets the giggles and makes silly jokes. She'll surprise you by making a joke that's hilarious but also mildly offensive. Famous example, in giving a spelling test to Peter, Peter was upset that you stole his story. Giving a spelling test to Peter, spell brick, as in, that squirrel is thick as a brick. So that's a picture of homeschooling right there for you. I am truly honored to be my mother's daughter. She is incredible. I wish she could see how wise, strong, independent, and respected she is. And last but never least, Malia wrote, I have never doubted that my mom loves me. She is a constant source of quiet strength and support to me, our family, and to everyone who knows her. I remember her giving me advice in a particularly selfish moment to be a blessing to others, to not be focused on what I want, but to focus on blessing others. I can't count the number of times people have asked me, how does your mom do it? People marvel at the fact that my mom gave birth to 6 children and makes raising a large family look easy. Honestly, I'm not sure how she does it. I only hope that I will learn from her and become more like her as I grow up. So back to Proverbs, verse 29. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. So I think clearly, as a husband speaking to a wife, this can never be a literal statement. You cannot say that to your wife that she literally surpasses every other woman. It made me think of the preschool kid writing the card to the world's best mom or best dad ever. It's a statement from the heart. So I would unequivocally declare to you, you far surpass them all. So verse 30, and I'm almost done, thankfully. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the fruits of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. Carol, you fear the Lord, and I praise you. Not in a sense of worship, but in calling out everything that's praiseworthy. You think there is so little, but there is so much. I am yours and you are mine, and I'm grateful. So let's pray. Music, come on up. Father, thank you. I thank you for my excellent wife. I thank you that she is not the only one. Thank you that you have given us to one another and that you have, this is what you want for all of us. You want that fullness and that blessing. And I pray that you would make that more true in each of our marriages, whether they be current or future, and that you would watch over and just carry each of us and help us to love one another better, to love one another as you have loved us. Thank you for thank you for how you've made us, that you have made us for such a thing, and that you love us and you call us your bride. We are so full of faults, and yet we, the church, are your bride, and you love us and you shape us and you make us beautiful. Help us, Lord, to just be Jesus to one another. In Jesus' name, amen.